So, in the end, non-compete agreements remain a fact of life for businesses and employees in Massachusetts. Two state lawmakers who tried to negotiate an agreement between the House and the Senate on a bill that would restrict employers from imposing non-compete agreements on their workers say it failed over very small but fundamental differences. WBUR's Fred Tice reports, in the end, it came down to how much compensation employees would get if they agreed not to work for a competing company.
Frank Coelho is having lunch with colleagues at a cafe on Northern Avenue in the Innovation District.
People have to make a living.
Coelho, who works for a medium-sized life sciences company, believes non-compete agreements are unfair.
You can't really shut somebody out where, like, then they can't work.
But in Massachusetts, you still can. Despite a grueling weekend of negotiations, legislators failed to reach a long-hoped-for agreement to limit these kinds of contracts. Negotiators say the House and Senate agreed to a House version of the bill that would have allowed employers to keep former employees from working for competitors up to a year. Democrat Dan Wolf of Harwich, one of the Senate negotiators and also the founder and CEO of Cape Air, would like to eliminate non-compete agreements.
I think they're immoral. First of all, I think employees and workers should be able to sell their labor on the open market, and there shouldn't be restrictions on what they get for it. And also, it's an inhibitor on the entrepreneurism in our economy.
But Wolf says he could not agree to a deal that did not guarantee that companies pay employees at least 50% of their compensation during the year they'd not be allowed to work for a competitor. House negotiators would not agree to that. Several employer associations, including the largest, Associated Industries of Massachusetts, want to preserve non-compete agreements. Christopher Guerin is the group's executive vice president.
The vast majority of Massachusetts employers believe that non-competes are a key tool to protecting intellectual property and giving employers the confidence they need to make investments that create innovation and new products here in Massachusetts.
Venture capitalists, on the other hand, believe non-compete agreements hold back innovation. Ari Glantz is program manager at the New England Venture Capitalists Association.
When you lock up talent to one employer, you stifle the potential for new startups to grow and thrive and contribute to the overall economy.
Glantz is optimistic that the legislature will eventually restrict these kinds of agreements. The legislative session ended this weekend. The next legislative session ends in 2 years, and House negotiator John Sibak, a South Hadley Democrat, worries that by then, a different group of legislators may still not be able to reach agreement on a way to restrict non-compete agreements.
In some of the most egregious cases, you know, there are employees of sandwich shops that are forced to sign non-competes. There are individuals who do internships while they're going to college or graduate school, they've been forced to sign non-competes.
Sibak worries that all those people could find their employment options severely curtailed because this legislation did not pass. For 90.9 WBUR and Bostonomics, I'm Fred Tice.
As the war of words between Donald Trump and the family of a Muslim American soldier killed in Iraq escalates, the families of other service people killed in the line of duty are getting involved. Over a dozen Gold Star families signed a letter demanding that Trump apologize for disparaging comments about Keyser Khan following Khan's appearance at the Democratic National Convention. But Trump defenders, including Army veteran Charles Grillo of Newton, say it's Khan who should act by speaking directly to Muslim Americans about the threat of radical Islamic terrorism rather than attacking the candidate, Donald Trump.
Mr. Khan might have an opportunity to maybe be a potential spokesperson to advise that we should eradicate the radicalism, because a lot of people are getting radicalized, and that's causing people to get killed, which should stop and must stop.
Among the relatives of service people killed in the line of duty looking for an apology from Donald Trump is a Bedford woman whose son died in an ambush of his convoy in Iraq in 2003. Alma Hart did not sign that letter we mentioned, but came to our studios to talk about Mr. Trump and her son, Army Private First Class John Hart.
I wake up every morning and I think about him. It's just the way it is. You wake up in the morning and you go, gosh, I miss him. And then you wake up enough to go, oh, yeah, he's dead. I have pictures of him all over the house, and I stop and I look at them and I get wistful. So I'm proud of the Cons for getting on the stage and even doing it. For them to be criticized for doing it really annoys me.
The Con family implied that Donald Trump is tone deaf, saying that he knows nothing about sacrifice. And I'm wondering, do you feel that what Donald Trump has said about all this somehow devalues your and your family's sacrifice?
It indicates that he doesn't understand. And I've had this so many times at, you know, where you meet people at parties or at some sort of business meeting, and they don't know what to say and they shoot their mouth off the wrong way. Trump seems to not be able to have normal civil discourse, that if he can't even back up and say, you know, I said that wrong. And he had plenty of time to think over his reply. He didn't get surprised at a dinner party.
He has responded by calling the Con son a hero.
Mm-hmm.
But he also said that since he was viciously attacked, he asked, am I not allowed to respond? I'm wondering what your response to his question is.
The Cons did not viciously attack him. They indicated that he apparently hadn't read the Constitution. Should he have responded to that? No. He needs to grow a thicker skin if he's going to be a successful president. For the Cons to say he's wrong about Muslim Americans, who better to speak on the matter?
Questions are being raised about whether the deaths of servicemen and women in the line of duty should be politicized. Do you think that's what's happened here, the politicizing of a military death?
No. My son did not sign away my civil rights when he joined the Army. And for any family to make a statement contributing to the national discussion is not politicizing a death.
I'm wondering what you hope will come out of all this.
An honest discussion. You know, we have, you know, starting from 2001 into the present, I mean, we've had, you know, 15 years of war and nothing's really straightened out. We've got the rise of ISIS. I don't know what's going to happen in Syria and Turkey. We need to have a serious discussion on, are we willing to send American soldiers and Marines back over there for more? I mean, how many American lives are we willing to risk? And are you willing to risk your child?
Your son's buried in Arlington, right?
My son is buried in Arlington National Cemetery, which Mr. Kahn referenced. The headstones, it's a great social leveler because the headstones are all shaped the same, and you stand there on the grass, and it's sloping down the hill, and you see all the stones. It's just the feeling that you get there, and to look at the whole expanse of, you know, 150 years worth of military graves, it's...
As you say, the great equalizer.
It is. It absolutely is.
Alma Hart of Bedford, thank you very much for coming in. Very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. It was a pleasure to be here and contribute to this conversation.
Alma Hart is a Gold Star mother from Bedford. Her son, Army Private First Class John Hart, was killed in action in Iraq in 2003. The Department of Veterans Affairs estimates up to 30% of former U.S. service members from the Vietnam War to Iraq and Afghanistan have post-traumatic stress disorder. They don't all seek treatment, but among those who do, the VA says 20 to 40% don't get better with the standard regimen of therapy, medication, or both. Increasingly, veterans are seeking out alternative mental health care, much of it untested. Reporter Karen Brown visited one such treatment center in Pittsfield.
Trying to go out?
At Soldier On in Pittsfield, a transitional housing organization for veterans, Director Jack Downing has seen hundreds of clients cycle in and out of homelessness, depression, substance abuse, and other effects of trauma. Soldier On offers psychotherapy and antidepressants to deal with PTSD, the nightmares, flashbacks, anxiety. But Downing says many chronically ill vets don't stick with the treatment.
Much of what we do medically just doesn't work. We keep doing these things because we don't know what else to do. As a result of that, we were looking for alternatives that would work.
A couple years ago, Downing met Stephen Zodkoy, a New Jersey-based chiropractor who claimed to have a new way to make veterans feel better.
As he explained how he did this process, it just made some sense to me.
Zodkoy's methods are far from mainstream. He links PTSD to what he calls fatigue of the adrenal glands. He says he measures chemicals in his patients' urine and then prescribes herbs and nutrition supplements to balance out their hormones. Zodkoy also uses what's called neuro-emotional technique, in which patients revisit traumatic memories while a chiropractor tests their muscle reaction and taps them on acupressure points.
In all honesty, none of this is my idea. I've just basically taken the work that other people have done for decades and put it into a package that is efficient and effective.
Soldier On says it's recruited 450 veterans to try Zodkoy's method. 30% dropped out in the first 2 months. Sam Bennett, a formerly homeless vet who now works at Soldier On, has lasted longer than that. He says he thinks it's helped, though he never quite understood the chiropractic part done by a colleague of Zodkoy's.
She did it and I thought, you know, what's going on? And she was giving me the diagnosis of how this affected, you know, were you sad, were you this, and we was talking about family stuff back in the past, stressful situations, and, you know, that was good therapy.
But he's not sure if the muscle tapping helped. Neither is Noel Moore, a Vietnam-era vet who tried the program. He gives more credit to the supplements Zodkoy prescribed, though he can't remember which kind. He's pretty sure they've allowed him to rely less on a walker to get around, and helped him improve his personal finances.
Well, whatever they're doing is working. I can't really say in medical terms. Nope.
By Zodkoy's own admission, there's very little scientific evidence his program works as good or better than traditional therapy. He has anecdotal testimony and a survey he gave to 20 Marines, all of whom reported feeling better after his treatment. But there have been no clinical trials or peer-reviewed studies. There's no proof the treatment offers more than the passage of time, one-on-one attention, or a placebo effect. To Zodkoy, that doesn't matter.
Is it the herbs? Don't know. Is it the one-on-one work? Don't know. Is it the placebo? Don't know. But what I will say is this, I don't care. As long as the veterans are feeling better, it's a win.
Another person who doesn't care is Jack Downing, the Soldier On director, who says his group spends $200,000 a year from a private donor fund on Zodkoy's program. He says he didn't ask to see any research.
I'm not a medical guy. I'm not looking to do any of that. I know by the lack of decompensating episodes that are taking place in people's lives that the quality of their life is better.
That might be evidence enough for Soldier On, but not for many in the medical community.
Look at bloodletting in the Middle Ages. They had all kinds of testimonials. It was in the textbooks. The doctors believed in it. They had gut feelings that bloodletting worked.
Harriet Hall is a retired physician and Air Force colonel who edits the blog Science-Based Medicine. Hall says almost every treatment works for at least a few people. And in the case of PTSD, a large percentage actually recover on their own.
How do you know whether it was a treatment or not unless you'd done a control study to find out?
Stephen Zodkoy's PTSD treatment is certainly not the only unconventional one out there. In recent years, people have offered thought field therapy, energy healing, hot cups on people's backs, electromagnetic therapy, sweat lodges. In Texas, a chiropractic clinic used state funding to spin vets around in chairs to stimulate the brain.
When people are understandably desperate, understandably in pain, who can blame them? They may be seeking out new things, and I would be in the same boat.
Emory University psychologist Scott Lilienfeld studies pseudoscience and mental illness. He says the best evidence-based treatment for PTSD is cognitive behavioral therapy, meant to help people develop coping strategies. and prolonged exposure therapy to desensitize people to traumatic memories. Lilienfeld suspects the standard treatment fails to work for many people because their therapist does it wrong.
That, I think, leaves a big gap, a big vacuum, whereby people who are peddling, hawking treatments that are rather faddish, and in some cases rather even pseudoscientific, can quickly fill in that gap.
In its practice guidelines, the Department of Veterans Affairs recommends treatments with the most rigorous scientific evidence. But at the same time, the VA does recognize a growing demand for alternative health care. Paula Schnur heads the National Center for PTSD, which is part of the VA.
Personally, I'm not concerned about veterans seeking alternative strategies in addition to effective strategies.
As long as the alternative doesn't replace a method with more evidence behind it. Schnur says 90% of VA centers across the country do offer some sort of alternative treatment for PTSD, and many have been studied through clinical trials, some like meditation and yoga, with promising results. The National Center for PTSD is now looking into the benefits of Tai Chi.
Because as a martial art, it is something that may be appealing to veterans. It's certainly a practice that can enhance health. And part of recovering from PTSD or other mental disorders isn't only about treating the symptoms, it's about treating the whole person.
Schnur also points out one approach to trauma, once treated with broad skepticism, is now on the VA's list of approved treatments. EMDR, devised in the late 1980s, uses bilateral eye movement, looking side to side, during cognitive behavioral therapy. Now that about a dozen clinical studies have come out on EMDR, Schnur feels comfortable recommending it.
I'm convinced the treatment works. I'm not sure why.
But as long as the treatment is based on rigorous science, she says, that's evidence enough. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Karen Brown.